Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Hey, I'm reading a book right now, which I didn't read when it first came out, but it's a Bruce Feldman book, the dude who wrote Meat Market, all that. He wrote a book called The Making of a Quarterback. And it's about all the Elite 11 and also the quarterback gurus and all that kind of stuff. And it is very interesting on many levels. Interesting in like I'm rolling my eyes at some of the stuff. Interesting in that there's some legitimate insights. But one of the things that's really cool is it's got even more stuff about Tom House, because late in his career, he wasn't just the baseball guru, like I'll fix your pitcher guy. He became sort of a quarterback guru because he was like, I'm good at teaching people to throw stuff, and quarterbacks throw stuff. And he actually had some interesting observations. He really helped Drew Brees a lot. And I think Drew Brees is largely responsible for being Drew Brees, but apparently Tom House is pretty instrumental to him. But he had some really interesting observations. Some of them were baseball related, sadly, but it did actually teach me some stuff about baseball. Did you know Tom House was a Major League Baseball pitcher?
Yes. No, I mean he was big on having Nolan Ryan. So I watched like as a
He was
kid.
Nolan Ryan's dude. That's kind of what
Yeah,
put him.
like as a kid, I basically just watched Nolan Ryan and Tom House VHS tapes, and
Yep.
that was my coaching as I grew up in
So
the
Tom House is 5'9", 175.
Tiny dude.
You know what his fastest, you know what his fastball was?
That's why he threw fairly hard for a
83.
No, he threw harder than that.
Yes,
No
he threw
way.
83. And so what he
I
talked
thought he
about,
was like an
I don't know.
86. I thought he was like an 86, 88 guy, but yeah, whatever. On
No, so
today's guns, he'd be 86, 88.
yeah, well, super interesting because he's like, I could not be drafted or play Major League Baseball today because they would just ignore, they just throw my, they it doesn't
Yeah, if
matter
you
what
throw,
I
if you throw an
do.
83, you're out. Yep,
He's like,
100%.
I would just not be scouted or evaluated. And so he talks about what pitching backwards means and stuff obviously, but to me it was like a little bit of an insight. I mean, I'd heard the expression, I know what it means, but he talked about what it actually means, like in practice. And then he talked about like the importance, this is not new to you, but like the pitch when it's one and one is the most important pitch you'll throw.
Most important strike count in the world.
Yes. Because if you throw a
Close.
strike, the hitter's a
Closely.
200 hitter. If you throw a ball, he's a 300 hitter, right?
Closely followed by OO. But yes, 1-1, 1-1. Everybody's like, I'll throw first strike. Like, no, that's not really. OO, you have the opportunity to set your agenda.
Yeah.
1-1, you're trying to leverage an advantage.
Yep.
But yes, no, he is 100% right on that. And yes, I have heard that his philosophy. It's crazy to me that he was. I mean, I knew he wasn't a hard thrower, but it's kind of funny that that's how baseball works. A lot of times, it's like, hey, this is what I couldn't do, so I'm going to teach you how to do it.
Yeah.
With Nolan Ryan, but yeah, no, he, I know later he got into sort of some weird stuff too, but he's definitely a guy that I've heard a lot of and watched a lot of things, but no, he's 100% right on the 1-1 thing. 1-1 is your money making count.
And then he talked about that there's three types of speed in baseball or velocity. Your actual velocity, your perceived
Perceived.
velocity, and then your relative velocity. And you'd think relative and perceived are the same, But he said, no, it's how it's how the pitch comes compartment like sandwiched in between the other pitches you threw.
Absolutely.
And not just the speed or type of pitch, but where you threw it.
Yep.
And so you're, and it all, that also ties with perceived velocity. But basically his point was, when I threw my 83 mile per hour fastball after nibbling and driving them nuts with my stupid changeup and curves and, you know, sliders, he's like, it was perceived as coming at 93.
Yep.
Because of where it got placed and where it came. So I just thought that was very interesting. I know this is not like revelation for you, but
no, there's a guy I played with in the Toronto organization pitching in the big leagues. His name's Brad Mills. He pitched at University of Arizona, from Arizona. And you've never watched a guy throw more 88 mile an hour fastballs that are just, I mean, I'm talking on a line straight, no movement, no deception, kind of threw dead over the top. Good changeup, good curveball. And that dude would throw 88 mile an hour fastballs right by people all day long. And you're just like, how in the world is this guy doing this? And it plays into that. It's just changeup, curveball, changeup, curveball, heater, whoop. It's to the hitter, it's 97.
It's wild, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, in any event, one of the things that he does get into, Feldman, I mean, not Tom House, is the quarterback gurus. And so you and I have talked a little bit about this. I don't know if we've talked about it much on air, but baseball, probably more than any other sport, gets exploited by fake gurus. Travel baseball, elite all-star, 10,000 hours, Malcolm Gladwell bullshit, which if y'all ever want me to go on a rant about that, I'm happy to disprove every aspect of 10,000 hours. Other than the basic insight, the practice is good. Or good practice is good. But 10,000 hours reinforced a lot of that nonsense in baseball because it told a bunch of baseball dads, I can make my son into a major league player through sheer repetition and force of will. And it's like, actually, your son needs to be real freaking talented. And even if he's really talented, he better also be pretty lucky.
Yep.
Because you're not guaranteed to make it. You know, the filter is not efficient.
In theory, you can make him the best that he's going to be, but even that's not guaranteed. And then, yes, the window has to open at the correct time.
Well, and the evidence is that you can make a very good young baseball player who will actually top out if he's only playing baseball. And in fact, he would have had a longer curve and better ultimate trajectory of development at age 19 if he played some football and played some lacrosse and played some soccer as well. So kind of interesting. I mean,
I'm on board with you, man. It's like you see the stuff about 6U travel ball tournaments and everything. It's like cool, yeah. I guess. I don't know. Like
1 year out from your T-ball kids.
I mean,
it's nonsense.
I don't know.
I mean, if y'all don't know about Randy, he was obviously a very good pitcher. He was also captain of the women's field hockey team. And
No, it was the men's field hockey team.
But you wore skirts.
Women's. What's the thing called?
Jailai?
No, the deal where you wear skirts and run around with sticks. But it's the thing from Harry Potter.
Oh, Quidditch.
Quidditch. Yes, it was the women's Quidditch team, but the men's field hockey team.
See, that's a lie. Sorry. Because Harry Potter was not invented yet. Was Harry Potter out when you were in high school?
I have no idea.
Dang it. You wouldn't know either.
No idea.
If Randy saw someone reading Harry Potter in his high school, he'd like knock the book out of their hand. What's this nerd shit?
No, I have no idea. I was too much in my own world at that point in time. I wouldn't even care.
All right. All joking aside, Randy played quarterback in high school, played basketball, also pitched. Even though probably around age 15, baseball was your best sport, correct?
Yeah, I knew I wasn't going to be able to see over the offensive line if I wanted to play in college.
Okay.
Yeah, in terms of sports that I loved and everything, yeah, football would probably be at the front.
But my point was
I was just a lot better at baseball.
Played the other sports.
Yes. No, 100%. Absolutely.
You didn't go baseball year round and
I've joined nine different travel
baseball teams.
Babe Ruth was big in the area back in the day. We did that, but that wasn't a, you know, 3 games a week type thing in the summer. It was more you kind of did what you did, and then there was a couple, you know, regional and sectional tournaments to get to the World Series, but it was minimal compared to what it is now. And every once in a while, there'd be a local pop-up thing where, like, the local six towns would throw together a select team and we'd go play a tournament a month type thing. But, yeah, we were full-fledged in, you know, off-season football workouts. So, you know, you had to do a certain number of workouts in the off-season for your high school football team. And that was all, you know, senior-driven. It was all, quote-unquote, voluntary. But, you know, you had to check the box on all that stuff, or else, you know, there was a lot to pay for once the season reporting came around.
Yeah. Well, I think we talked about before that, I don't know how much it was offline or on the podcast, but on your national title, baseball teams at Texas, or the very good teams that even didn't win the national title, your national title team may not have been the best team that you played on, right?
No. 04 is better than 05 in my opinion. And I think most of the people that you talked to would agree with that. But our makeup was very much a multi-sport makeup most of those years. You know, a lot of the guys were, you know, small town guys and or just multi-sport guys that weren't specialists.
But I would say an abnormally large number of your teammates were like all district quarterbacks or wide receivers.
Yes, I would agree with that. Yeah.
And probably could have played minor to middle tier college football if they'd like made that their
primary. A lot of them could, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So, I mean there was a lot of them that were a lot better than I was at football. Either roll through it their entire high school career, or then, you know, maybe late because they were at a bigger high school. Then focused on baseball because that was kind of their, you know, the thing there with the bigger schools back in the day. But, you know, it was a lot of multiple guys, and even if they weren't, let's say they just played baseball at a big, you know, big 5A high school back in the day, you know, if we'd have ran out to the intramural fields or whatever, like I don't think there was very many people on our team that looked out of place. If we did throw up a flag football game, like they had the ability to do it. It wouldn't have been like, what is this? Like, I've never seen this before. Like, everybody was just very, very well-rounded athletes on those teams. And like I said, I was far down the list compared to most of them.
Just think how good you guys would have been if all of you had just played baseball since the age of 6 year round.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure you would have been great athletes when you were 19.
Yeah, no, it's not really. I'm sure there's people out there that have data and whatever but yeah, it's not my thing. I got one kid that just started T-ball that I'll be in as involved as he wants to be, and then I got a 2-year-old son that's coming right behind him. But if he wants to practice every day, we can practice every day. But I'll let them find their own way. And I hope that way is let's go play basketball during basketball season and football during football season and baseball during baseball season.
Hey, sounds like a real childhood. Hey, the 2-year-old, I think the 2-year-old is going to be a football player.
The 2-year-old looks like a football player. I'll put it that
I think
way.
He's either going to be a football player, a wrestler, or a UFC fighter based on the stories I'm hearing.
The rate he's going, he's going to be limited to fullback or a linebacker, unless he learns how to jump, which my wife was a gymnast, so she jumped off a trampoline, and I can't jump more than 2 inches off the ground. So we'll see. See what is
awesome.
what happens there. But yeah, since his older brother now plays T-ball, he carries a bat around the house all day, every day. So
I think that's just an intimidation thing.
He does have a little bit of that in him as well. A little bit of intimidation for sure from the little big guy that's almost the size of his brother.
That's awesome. So the reason I mentioned the baseball travel, baseball scam, and is you're selling the dream, right, to these
Absolutely.
Parents.
Yep.
And you got parents spending $40,000 in like between ages 11 to 14 trying to get private pitch coaches for their, and by the way, I'm not saying that getting a pitching coach is a bad idea for your son if he's
no, absolutely not, but
he doesn't need like year round six sessions a week. Like that's not helpful, but,
and you got to understand that it's a sport that still has 11.7 scholarships for 30 people.
That's the other part.
So all this money you're investing is going to that. So now you're talking about, hey, let's get drafted and make that money worth it. So you're even narrowing the pyramid at the top of the talent pool. And it's just be athletic, man. Be athletic. You'll figure it out. If you're good enough, they'll find you. And I'm not hating on travel ball and this. I mean, it's to the point now where travel ball, if you're in an area where you don't have a good little league system or whatever, you almost have to just to do it.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
But being athletic is never a bad thing, put it that way. And I'll leave it.
No, it's not. And the reason I brought it up is because football is a little different generally, because the athleticism there and whether you're going to make it is more apparent.
Yes.
You and I can go watch some kids running around and we'll both go, that guy may have a shot.
Yep.
These five, I hope they like major in accounting. And this kid looks like an orthodontist. That's cool. And I hope they have fun, and you should still coach them and let them enjoy team sports, because it makes them better people. But we'll know very quickly who's the kid that might have a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the thing that the only sport potentially that you can deceive someone, and it's amazing, not the only sport, the only position in football that you can deceive someone potentially, is the most important position on the field, and that's quarterback. And so this book gets into all those quarterback gurus, the Steve Clarksons, all these guys who do some interesting stuff. They make their money not off of the famous clients that you know of, who, by the way, they tutored for free because they'd already identified them as studs. And in exchange, they just asked for a quote, right? They make their money off the sons of millionaires who aren't very good and aren't going to be good, who spend tens of thousands of dollars getting their son private quarterback coaching. And Feldman gets into this a little bit in the book, and it's very interesting. It's a little bit of a scam.
100% it is. A lot of it is, unfortunately, and it traverses all sports, but the thing about baseball that's crazy, that's different from all the other sports, is when you're a kid, the field is a different size.
Yes.
And you can be so good until the field changes.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden your body does not change with it. And there's so many people that I've talked to and seen over the years. Well, my kid was really good at 10 and 11, you know, but then we went to junior league and, you know, it just, yeah, he didn't grow. Like, I mean, that's big damn difference, throwing the ball 15 more feet further to home plate and having to run 30 more feet and all that. And it's just, I think that's what opens the door in baseball to a lot more of the younger age, whatever you want to call it. That's why I say, until you get to 13, just teach the game.
Yes. Skills.
Just teach the game. Let's develop skills. Let's take the island approach. Let's throw it as far as you can. Let's hit it as hard as you can. Let's do all this stuff, because once the field changes, everything goes out the window and you got to start over.
Yeah.
Because everything you've learned at that point is completely different.
Also, developmentally, an interesting thing happens to boys starting around 12 and 13, Randy.
Very true.
And a lot of these great stories that you hear about someone coming from nowhere, they ignore the part where Aaron Rodgers was 5'2" as a high school freshman.
Yep.
Barry Sanders was 5 feet tall, even.
Well, he's still 5 feet even.
Exactly. But, you know, you hear these stories.
Sorry, Barry, if you're listening.
That's right. But you hear these stories about, like, well, no one identified Aaron Rodgers, and so that could be my son. And it's like, okay, you're sure your son's going to grow a foot some from when he was 14 and then actually from age 22 to 25 get considerably bigger, stronger, and suddenly his arm strength. I mean, if you read all of his NFL scouting reports coming out of Cal, it's like arm strength adequate.
Yeah, very average across
25 the board. Years old in the NFL, arm strength best in NFL.
Yeah, extremely intelligent, smart guy, outplayed his ability coming out.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he got bigger, faster, stronger.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, and so the stuff that's not easily measurable often has to do with some freakish stuff that happens that's just an act of God. You can't control, like Dennis Rodman's working at an airport right after high school, not even playing, didn't really even play basketball much. And then he grows 6 inches in a summer and keeps his like athleticism. And then suddenly goes to like some minor NAIA school. It was like
it's like Northeastern Oklahoma or something, right? Yeah. Somewhere in Oklahoma, yeah.
And then just takes up Scottie Pippen. He's a student manager at Central Arkansas. And then he grows 6 inches in a year and a half at age like 19.
Yeah. No, you don't know. I have no problem with the, hey, let's organize and teach kids the game at a young age deal. But you're phasing people out too early, I guess, is where my problem is with the whole thing.
Well, and the truth is youth sports, the benefit of them is to try to create a better, more cohesive society of people that aren't selfish turds.
Yep.
It's not to create the next major leaguer.
Correct. Yeah, because the odds of that are so infinitesimally small. Like, it's crazy. Like, you take the whole United States population that plays that, like, going to college is a miracle.
Getting a college scholarship to play baseball at a real school is
a miracle.
Is badass. Basically.
Yeah.
Yes.
If when you talk about like strict numbers and everything. So it's, that's what I said. It's like, just.
And you know what? From there.
Oh, yes.
Guys ain't going to make it.
And it's not like everybody talks about the pyramid of talent, right?
Yeah. Well,
that pyramid doesn't do this. Like, that pyramid is very wide at the base, and it gets to a certain age, and it goes horizontally towards itself.
Yeah.
And then it goes to the top of the pyramid. It's not a gradual pyramid. Like, it gets small real quick.
The point of the pyramid isn't the top of a triangle. It's a hypodermic needle.
Yes, absolutely. Right?
That's, yeah. And by the way, you're not competing with other Americans anymore. No,
it's the whole world now.
You're competing with the planet.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean,
that's why I brought up the islands and the Dominican and, you know, Venezuela and all that stuff. And I mean, I guess Japan's kind of on a little bit of a different scale, but I mean, you talk about the people that come off the islands, we'll use them. The point of this deal, they're toolsy. The reason they're toolsy is they're not teaching an 8 year old how to hit behind a runner.
No.
Like, we're trying to hit the ball as far as we can, as hard as we can. And if we get to a certain level where your talent level is here, all right, now we're going to start teaching the game. Yeah. And I understand that there's a faction out there, and I would be part of this faction, I'll give you that, that would say that the major league level doesn't understand how to play the game as well as they used to. I think that's a failure in the middle. Not at the bottom. I think you develop tools and then you teach the game and then those people grow into be professionals. I don't think you teach the game to 9 year olds. It doesn't work that way. Like, you need tools to be able to be a good baseball player.
Yeah. Well, and here's the something that, so this is interesting. This might be provocative. You might actually upbraid me and tell me I'm wrong, but the people that interpret baseball for the layperson aren't baseball players.
Agreed. 100% agree with you.
It's sports writers and failed, frankly, baseball players who couldn't make it, who are the league, you know, the youth league coaches. And the sports writers, by the way, know and understand some nuances of the game and in ways that I don't understand. I'm a guy who on a podcast called a grand slam a four-run homer once, right?
It's a four-run homer. You're not It wrong.
Is a four-run homer. I was correct on that. Thank you. But my point is, I understand first principles of athleticism. So I laughed out loud at the genius priests of the game interpreting the Bible of baseball to us illiterates when they told you that steroids don't make you better at baseball. It's not going to help you hit the ball or locate a spot with your pitch better. And I'm laughing out loud, like, getting really freaking strong in a sport like baseball makes you a better baseball player. Dildos. Yep. And to not understand this, when you understand all these nuances of the game, but you don't understand a first principle of athletics, right? Which is strength is never a weakness, right? And even as a pitcher, taking PEDs will help you.
I think to a grander scale, I think it's an overarching problem across all genres of professionalism in this country is most of the regulatory people don't get it.
Dude, that's a brilliant description of these folks. They're regular.
I run into it in my current line of work all the time.
Right.
I mean, yeah, that's technically what it says, but that doesn't make it a better product. Like, I'm trying to give the owner a better product, and it's the same thing. And I can't speak for every other profession, but I know my wife deals with it on the physical therapy side with the, you know, the health care system and all that stuff. It's the regulatory people don't get it because they couldn't do it. And I'm not saying you had to do it to get it, but a vast majority don't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because former athletes will have their own blind spots.
Yes, which is, absolutely. Yeah, and we do. And I'm guilty of that as well.
Their thing is, this is how I did it. Like, Michael Jordan couldn't fathom, like, why don't you just do this?
Yeah.
Right?
So my favorite, and maybe getting in the weeds or not, but my favorite pitching coach that I dealt with in Toronto was a guy named Pete Walker. And Pete is still the pitching coach in the big leagues for Toronto. And Pete had a very interesting career as a player, somewhat similar to mine. He was a little more talented than me. But he came up as a very high prospect guy, fast-tracked, got hurt, kind of had to reinvent himself and start over because he never really got back to what he was before. So he sort of saw things from both sides, right? So he could relate to big prospect guy that just signed and, you know, had the big arm and all this stuff because he had that at one point in time. So he could teach that side. But he could also come to me and say, hey, you used to throw 94. You don't anymore. How are you going to do it now? Mm-hmm. Quit trying to throw 94 because you don't have it anymore. So you can keep trying to throw 94 and you can keep hitting barrels. or we can figure something out, right?
Yep.
So I think people like that in the real world are few and far between, and they're few and far between in the baseball world as well. But people with perspective to be able to deal with multiple different approaches to the same goal, I think are worth their weight in gold, regardless of what arena you're in.
Yeah, you know, what's funny too is what's interesting to finish my thought is all the baseball writers that told us that steroids don't help you.
Yeah.
For the baseball, right? 10 years later, when it's demonstrably true by Barry Bonds bludgeons the truth into their heads.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now they won't vote for him for the Hall of Fame because he's a cheater.
Yeah, but I thought you said it didn't.
So help. Which is it?
Yep. No, 100%. Absolutely right.
But it's a funny thing because in terms of general baseball knowledge, they have me beat, not you, but they have me beat if we have a conversation. Hey, what do you do here? I don't know. Well, it's a left-handy. It's left-hander. It's a 3-3 game. It's the eighth inning. Where does he want to throw this ball? I don't know. I'll ask my friend Randy. But at a certain level, I understand the sport better than they do because I understand the first principles of athleticism.
Yep.
And that's my point about, and your point, I should say, about youth baseball. Develop traits. Develop the underlying, not just fundamentals, which is are important, but the fundamentals of athleticism. Then you can teach the game.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, a 10-year-old, you're not, like the winning and losing part doesn't matter at that point.
No. I mean, there's okay? a scoreboard for a reason. Like, we're going to try and win the game.
For a reason, but I don't
but
care if
we're not, yeah, we're not doing that. Yep, absolutely.
The pitcher's learning traits, and I'm sorry, he balked. Great, whatever. You're going to teach him not to balk, and he won't do that anymore. But what you can't replace is the fact that he now understands certain principles of athleticism. He understands how to compete. He understands how to get through something out there by himself. I mean, think about being a little kid standing out on the mound. That's no joke.
I tell people all the time, I know that being a quarterback, I'll give you that. Standing out there being in charge in front of 100,000 people.
A quarterback's wearing a helmet.
But he's wearing a helmet and he's got people to help him.
You can't see a quarterback if he's crying.
You stand on a mound in the middle of a diamond and everybody's looking at you and you can't get an out and you look, turn around and you look around and you're like, yep, no help's coming.
Yeah.
It's all me. Especially when it's in the middle of Venezuela and you got everybody yelling at you in Spanish and you're not real sure what they're saying.
Yeah.
It can be a very lonely place.
I bet.
Or it can be a really awesome place if it's a home game and you're pitching well and they're on your side. So it can be very, very good. Or it can be very, very bad, but you got to learn to live in the middle somewhere.
Yep. Well, it's interesting stuff. It's the funny thing is the dads who this conversation we just had might benefit are already 25 grand into their spend and they're looking for ways to justify what they've already invested and not saying maybe I should take a step back and think about developing a whole athlete.
Like I said, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it probably shouldn't be the only thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. So I don't know if you ever read this, but I did it on Barking Carnival. I did a little version of it too on Inside Texas, where I wrote a thing about athletic performance. And, you know, I explained some of the things in the combine to people because I got tired of reading NFL scout reports where they'd say this guy had a 38-inch vertical, which means he can win jump balls. And like, no, that's not what his vertical means to a NFL GM or a scout.
That means he has lower body explosiveness. That's it.
It means he has power potential, right, in his lower body, right? And that has carryover to other aspects of his athleticism.
He may not be able to jump off 1 foot to save his life.
That's right. Or track a ball. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins is an amazing athlete in a certain level. He's an unremarkable athlete at wide receiver in other levels, right? Mm-hmm. But his timing, the strength of his hands, his ability to adjust to a ball, it's like remarkable. It's next level. But it's not because he's a freak of all freaks in terms of traits. So in any event, I wrote these articles and then I'd get private messages from people or I'd get emails, mostly from dads. And sometimes they'd have really good questions, but a lot of them you could tell they were invested in a certain mindset and I'd said something that upset them. And this one guy said, hey, I've got a 12-year-old son. I'm trying to assess his athletic potential. Sounds like you know stuff about this. Should I biopsy his thigh muscle, and send it to a lab and determine how much quick twitch muscle he's got? And so I said, well, why don't you watch him run and jump?
You're not serious, right?
I'm being very serious. I said, well, why don't you watch him run and jump? And that will make his biology apparent to you. His genotype would be revealed by his phenotype. And the guy said, no, 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 but I'm trying to get the scientific data.
Yeah, that is, that's it. That's the scientific data.
I was like, and he was like, well, do I like time him in the 40 or do his vertical? I was like, or you could just watch him run, play tag with other kids. You could watch him run around at recess. Is he good at catching the other kids? Is he hard to catch? Is he a springy little kid that's always like jumping off the roof and lands with his knees bent and rolls twice and then jumps up unhurt? Or does he break both of his ankles when he lands? You know, I mean, these things are apparent, right? And this guy wanted to biopsy. So if you guys don't know, when you biopsy, they punt, basically you take a little punch and you stick it in your thigh and you punch down and you scoop out a slice of muscle and you send it to a lab and they put it on a cover slip and break down their quick twitch and slow twitch and all that. And I was like, hey brother, that stuff's apparent. You can watch him and know what that is. But he's like, I want the exactitude so I know what training program to use. And I was like, man.
And it could change in 4 weeks.
By the way, it could change when he's
like
16.
My five-year-old, like, 2 years ago, I was like, man, we need, like, this dude can't run. And now it's like, it's the fastest guy on the team. Like,
yeah.
Cruising. So it's just,
Yeah.
He didn't get it from me. Must have got it from his mom. I don't know.
You were fast?
No.
Really?
No, I was like a 4.8 guy.
Well, that's fast.
No, that's not.
No, fast. And I'm not talking about athlete. I'm not talking like college football player fast. I'm talking about like normal population that's athletic.
Oh, okay, cool.
A true 4.8 40. We're not talking about the lies people manufacture about their high school stats.
This was like, high school stuff.
So one time, I remember.
Let's say I was 4.9. Whatever. All
right, so long before Inside Texas, there was Orange Bloods, right? Mm-hmm. And my Orange Bloods is still around. I don't read it. No, nothing against them. I just work for another site. But I was a member in my early 20s or when it first came out. And I remember one time a guy said, hey, on this thread, list your high school 40.
And oh, your high Lord. 3.6.
By the end of the thread, I am not joking, Randy. The average height, weight, and 40 of the Orange Bloods posters was like 6'1", 205, 4'6", something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I just remember writing, so what I've learned today is that either you're all liars or you're giant pussies. Yeah. Because none of you played any college sports.
No, like the fastest running back we had in high school, I think ran like a 4.6 something.
Yeah.
And I was
in
like,
high school, that's fast.
Yeah,
that's,
I was like, yeah, that's about right. Because, I mean, they didn't, you know, they went, a couple guys went and played to smaller colleges, this and that. But, you know, but yeah, you'd hear
everything about back in the day. We're famous for hand timing and being.
Oh, yeah. No, we had a legit setup. But yeah, I mean, you'd hear things about, you know, oh, God, they had a running back and runs like a 4.2. And it's like,
okay.
I just watched our safety that, it's not fast. Walk that dude down without an angle.
Also, you're that 4.2 running back. I just looked up his track time and he ran 11.
Right. Yeah. That was always the great equalizer. It's like, what did he run in track? No. That's why I never ran track. That's why I never ran track. So they couldn't ever verify it. So I was 4.84.
You were sneaky fast.
That's right.
You're deceptively. You're fast in the way only a white man can be, Randy.
Nobody can prove otherwise because I never ran further than that ever again.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we've covered some far-ranging topics here, but I think that's part of the reason people listen. But
I don't know why. I don't know why people listen anymore. But thank y'all for
doing so. Well, bottom line, Randy and I are team multi-sport.
Yes, absolutely.
And absolutely. Develop a lot of different athletic traits, let your kids sample different sports. And by the way, you might find out that dude that you wanted and dreamed and prayed would be a great baseball player. You might find out he's a pretty badass tennis player. You might find out he's an amazing distance runner. And By the way, guess who gets scholarships at Ivy League schools?
Yeah, those
distance runners, equestrian, fencing,
archery,
sculling.
Get them in archery.
Yeah, don't compete in all these hard sports with real athletes. Go find a niche sport that your kid's awesome at.
Pray for no rain on Saturday. I want to watch a spring game.
Praying for no rain, or at least a light drizzle. I am getting a vibe from Sark, irrespective of our depth, that we're not going to see a lot of hard tackling for long. So
I think you're going to see about one series out of the people that everybody are going there to see. And then after that, it's going to develop into a competition for depth.
Is it going to be some early whistle, two-hand touch?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a flag football game early.
That's cool. Well,
which I'm fine with. That's fine.
It'll be a bunch of dudes with the Texas insignia on their helmet running around. That will get my attention.
Oh, yeah.
It will have to get my attention on a delayed broadcast, as I'll be coaching a bunch of 10-year-old knuckleheads. And
I will be otherwise disposed. Trying to teach them what
a glance route is.
Yeah, I will be otherwise disposed as well, but I will try to watch it on Sunday.
Are you working or are you doing family stuff?
It's a surprise, Paul. I'll tell you next podcast.
Uh-oh. All right. Awesome. That's Randy. I think I have his velocity in all things, and it's just perceived velocity.
That's right.
He's throwing me a curveball.
Never know. Never know.
All right, fellas. With that, and for Randy Boone, unless he's got anything more to say that's wise and meritorious, we're signing off. Saying happy spring game, and I guarantee you, can't speak for Randy here, but I'm pretty sure we're both going to break this down at some point after the spring game.
More than likely, yes, because that's the only sport that I have going for me right now.
All right, very quickly, I was about to sign us off. I don't want to get you in trouble. I don't claim to be an expert in baseball, Randy. I'm fairly certain Rio Grande Valley shouldn't be land hidings on the University of Texas.
No.
I didn't know there was a school called Rio Grande Valley, for starters.
What's the old UT Pan Am?
Okay,
they rebranded. But
all right, sorry. No,
your point still holds.
No offense to any UT Pan Am grads, but things aren't looking great. And I don't just mean current, but also leading indicators on some other stuff. So I just want to throw it out. We're just going to say hypothetically, Randy, that the University of Texas baseball manager job is thrown open. Who's your top three? Who's your short list?
Whew, man, that's a tough one. I was going to talk about the Astros, but you brought up Texas, so I guess I go there. I would not gravitate towards your typical established Kevin O'Sullivan, Schlossnagel, whatever people.
What about the Clemson dude?
That's what I was about to say. I'd go Clemson. He's won at Michigan. He's won at Clemson. I think he's a graduate of Clemson, though. Is that correct?
I do not know. But he coached Michigan, right? He was the manager.
He was at Michigan. He's won at Michigan. He's won at Clemson. I know that's not an SEC deal. But yeah, hypothetically speaking, if something were to change, I think he would be on the short list for sure. I don't think the other people that are at the top of everybody else's list are probably attainable. And I think it's going to be somebody else. If it's not the Clemson guy, it would be somebody in that vein. Somewhat established, probably off the radar just a little bit. Somewhat up and coming.
Hungry.
I think hungry is a very big part of the equation.
Likes to recruit.
I think you're going to need, I don't know that it necessarily needs to be a recruiter depending on staff, but I think you are going to need somebody that's relatable. You know, and like I said, I've met Pierce once in my life and it was a good experience. So I don't have any personal, I'm going off of what I've heard, but I don't know that he's done himself a lot of favors with the donors and alumni and such, from what I've, when I understand.
I don't know if you know this, speaking of just Michigan baseball flashed in my head because they had not been relevant.
No, since the like 60s.
Jim Abbott.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So Jim Abbott, for those of you who don't know, younger, he was a very good college pitcher who had one arm.
Still had one arm.
He had sort of a half arm, right?
It was like right below the wrist.
It was severed right below his wrist, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't have an other hand, right?
Correct.
And so he would pitch and then immediately change his glove to the other hand to be able to field. Guess what I found out? Jim Abbott, talk about a freaking stud. Badass pitcher, right? Despite his...
Really good pitcher.
His disability. All district quarterback in high school.
That's nuts.
Took the center snap with one hand.
I did not know that. That's crazy.
Never fumbled a ball or a center exchange in his high school career. And you know where he played high school ball?
I would love to say in Michigan, but I feel like you're going to tell me I'm wrong.
No, Michigan. He's from Flint, Michigan.
Really?
This dude played in the hood.
Yeah.
Against the hood.
Yeah.
His entire life. Disability. Played in Flint, really poor, impoverished, rough community, tough as nails. This dude was an all-district high school quarterback, badass pitcher, and like, didn't he win the like most outstanding college baseball player award?
I know he had an absolutely ridiculously long career for what he was up against.
He played MLB.
Oh yeah, no, he played for a long time.
Like he played for the Angels organization. I think one year he almost won 20 games.
He went career record of, so he debuted in 89. His last appearance was in 99. So 10-year career.
Dang.
Maybe he went up and down in between. But yeah, career win loss of 87 and 108. So a little less than 500. Career ERA of 4.2. Played for the Angels, Angels, Yankees, White Sox, Angels again, White Sox again, and Brewers.
This dude had results in 195 Major League Baseball games.
And threw a no-hitter. Olympic team. Yeah, no, yeah. Crazy for his situation. Crazy.
I'm sorry. The pitching thing's amazing, but all-district high school quarterback.
I did not know that. That's crazy.
One hand. That's unbelievable. Dude, whenever you get down on human beings watching the news, it's good to reflect on the Jim Abbotts of the world. So,
yeah.
All right.
There are people out there that have it worse than you, I promise.
Always. Guaranteed. And not exactly a silver spoon in his mouth either. Dude grew up in Flint.
No, Flint's a rough spot.
So
it says he was in East Village, which so playing Lansing, I have a little bit more of a Michigan history than a guy from Yoakum, Texas probably should, but
former lug nut.
That's a rough area.
And when I'm calling him a lug nut, I'm not insulting him. That was the mascot.
Oh no, absolutely no. That's the good old big lug mascot.
That's right. You gotta love it. All right. Well, with that and then a little obvious tangent that we always have to take on this podcast because we're not capable of any discipline.
No, you can't. Yeah, it's
we shared some thoughts about Texas spring football. We shared some thoughts about youth sports and multi-sporting. And then, of course, we had to close with Jim Abbott. A little inspiration. So for Randy Boone, I am Paul Wadlington saying enjoy the spring game. Pray to the weather gods and hook them.
Hook them, everybody.
Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning, and right now he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, That's David McClellan, 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura, and it's 512-784-0505.